Back to Thea. I'm Joe Consorti. Today we're here once again with Peter Dunworth from the Bitcoin Advisor, a multifamily office for high net worth families that can help you safely custody your Bitcoin with multi-sig collaborative custody. Peter, once again, welcome back to the show.
Pleasure to be with you, Joe. Nice to see you.
Yeah, likewise. Nice to see you as well. It's been a minute. We caught up a little bit while we were off camera. Things have been going well with you over at the Bitcoin Advisor. Things are chugging right along over here with Thea. I guess before we jump into things, what have you been up to over at the Bitcoin Advisor?
You know, probably the last little bit, we've been focused on a whole host of things. One of the things that's been really interesting on a personal note, we put together some data on the clients that we've worked with over the last 12 months and come up with a very interesting stat that clients who've worked with us for the last 12 months have increased their stack on average by about 50%, which I've got to say I'm over the moon about, because, you know, part of the service that we offer is not only making sure that your Bitcoin's safe, but we think that there's a pretty good chance with the skills that we've acquired to help increase and grow clients' Bitcoin stack. And this is, I think, one of the great things that we get to enjoy as part of the ride, is to help people get more Bitcoin and helping Bitcoiners get more Bitcoin. There's a lot of fun to do.
Yeah, wow. Increase their stack by 50%. I imagine part of that has to do with obviously the price action, but probably also with the amazing white glove service that you guys provide when it comes to helping people set these up.
Yes, and I think it is price action creates interest. There's also something funny happens when you have your custody locked down. When you know that you can't fail with your custody solution, then there is the either tacit approval or implicit approval to go and invest more capital in Bitcoin. And that's typically what holds most people back from investing more in Bitcoin, is the fact that if they're self-custodying, they're like, am I doing this right? There's that little niggling doubt in the back of their mind thinking, well, I'm not sure I've got everything locked down. And this is where, like, a very simple test we, you know, ask, you know, potential clients to think about is, you know, if you don't wake up tomorrow, can your family recover your Bitcoin? And if the answer isn't satisfactory, then there's work to do on your custody setup. And this is where we provide all of the resources are available for free on our website, so clients can do that themselves, or if they want a professional to work with them to do that, then, you know, we're happy to provide that service.
That's huge. That's absolutely huge. And before we were talking, you know, one of the things we touched on was making it so that these higher net worth people, like getting people into collaborative custody, easy multi-sig, is what's going to take Bitcoin really to the next level. We have the institutions now who can buy these ETFs. We have people who can get direct and indirect exposure, but people want secure solutions. They want secure solutions that they, you know, that are widely available. You guys are providing that. And so it's an awesome stat that you shared, that, you know, a 50% increase in your holdings on average in their Bitcoin holdings. You know, just goes to show, just another service, you know, that is providing these things, really taking Bitcoin holdings to the next level. Because you're absolutely right. When people get up there and they start putting 5, 6, 7 figures of their net worth, you know, in this asset, they want to know that it's very secure. And so I think you guys are doing awesome work toward making it so that, you know, Bitcoin really reaches those huge milestones in terms of price.
I have to say it's a lot of fun, and I don't know with my skill set if I can contribute any further to the Bitcoin community than that. So if I can help get as many coins off exchange as possible, that's what I plan on doing. And this is where, you know, multi-sig providers, you know, I'm excited about what Thea is doing and what's coming to market there. I think, you know, that could be, you know, one of the inflection points for multi-sig, helping get an enormous amount of coins off exchange just because it's a simply user experience.
Absolutely. And that's what it all boils down to. People want to be able to understand things, right, before they really begin using them. And so in that vein, one thing that a lot of people are kind of put off by is this idea of collaborative custody. There are already a lot of syllables in both of those words put together. You turn most people off right there. But collaborative custody, walk us through what collaborative custody is. And then after that, I'll ask you another question about kind of inheritance planning. But just generally speaking, broad strokes, what is collaborative custody?
Collaborative custody is partnering with an expert or a domain expert, or might be a friend, it might be a family member. It could be a professional service like we offer. to help guide new or inexperienced Bitcoiners through the process of self-custody to ensure that there are no single points of failure. And this is where collaborative custody for me came in. And I'll tell you the Genesis story because it probably helps explain to the Bitcoiners listening a bit of an aha moment. But as an investment advisor, I have a fiduciary duty to my clients, a responsibility that I act in their best interests. And when we were first looking at Bitcoin and the thought of our clients self-custodying Bitcoin, it was a terrifying thought because most of our clients are baby boomers and they might not be as in the weeds when it comes to technology adoption as our younger clientele. And the thought of giving a client who's typically in their 60s or 70s what looks like a little USB stick with hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars worth of Bitcoin on it and letting them walk out the door with no parachute or net around them to stop them from doing something stupid was absolutely terrifying. And from a litigious perspective, I thought it put myself at huge risk to let a client walk out the door in a single seat arrangement with the thought that they could lose millions of dollars in Bitcoin. And what we came up with was a way to work with other professionals, Faya, and others, to provide a service whereby in a multi-sig arrangement, the client can have full control of the quorum of keys, but there are two other professional service providers who are holding a key on their behalf, and the client holds one key. And the importance of this is that the clients can do absolutely anything, and they will still not lose their Bitcoin. Now, this is of vital importance that that was a huge solve for me personally in a professional manner. And it also solved a big problem for clientele who wanted to self-custody but didn't want the responsibility or the fear of losing millions of dollars in Bitcoin. This was a way that we could have the best of both worlds. And like all solutions in Bitcoin, there's no solutions, only trade-offs. But what I found was when you had that collaborative security model, it allowed clients to have the confidence to buy far more Bitcoin much quicker than if they were managing the whole process themselves. Because a lot of people don't want to be responsible for millions of dollars of Bitcoin on themselves personally. That's bad OPSEC. It's puts them at huge risk personally. And this is where that collaborative security is a model of diversifying that and actually building confidence for clients that they can feel comfortable allocating much more capital to this space. Because and as the stats show that we shared earlier, that's a stat that's proving out that it allows clients to buy a lot more much quicker. Because they've got the confidence to know that they can't lose this.
Of course, absolutely. It's like, if you were buying a whole bunch of stocks, and then instead of it being, digitally ascribed with all this insurance, it's like you were taking all of the stock certificates physically and then bundling them in your arms and then like putting them in the trunk of your car. And if you lost them, oh well, but now you're making sure when your clients leave, when they walk out that door, if they lose their key, there are two more, one with you and one with somebody else, that they can recover everything with. And do you guys do a three of five setup as well, or is it just a two of three?
If clients wish for a three of five, absolutely. We've looked at two of four, we've looked at three of five. I think the simplest, which is the most effective and has the best trade-offs, would be a two of three multi-sig.
Excellent. And why is that? Explain to the viewers why that is, because I
Myself.
myself, prior to Theia, I knew of multisig, but I wasn't involved in it deeply, I will admit, because of just how difficult it was to understand and wrap my head around. And frankly, me as one person, I don't, I'll say this also for OPSEC purposes, I don't own a lot of Bitcoin. Actually, in fact, I don't own any Bitcoin for OPSEC purposes, but I don't own enough to where it was necessary for me to learn about multisig. But two of three seems to be the default. So why would you say that it has the best option with the least amount of trade-offs?
Well, I think two of three gives you all of the redundancies and allows us to provide a complete, no single point of failure setup for a client. It also means that no one, no single service provider is in control of the client's Bitcoin. And with a fiduciary responsibility to our clients, we have to act on clients' instructions. So our key and the alternate key is effectively an extension of the client. So we have a legal responsibility to act in accordance with what our clients' wishes are. When you extend, and I'll just back up a sec, A two of two multi-sig, I think, is redundant. You may as well have a single wallet. In many respects, so single sig's off the cards in our books. I've never touched single sig for any amounts over a couple of thousand dollars, because with a single sig, if you have your words compromised, you're not gonna know they're compromised until your wallet's empty. A two of two might provide some solace to that, in that you need, two of two to do that, or you might need one of two to sign that. Either or, that's going to be a problem that doesn't really get beyond the first problem of a single sig. To me, the sweet spot in multi-sig setup is two or three, because you have, particularly when it comes to collaborative security with us, you've got the service provider has a key, the software provider, the client has a key, and we have a key. And what this means is, working with professionals, is you remove any single points of failure. When you move beyond the two or three, and typically it doesn't go to two or four, it goes to that three or five, you then start complicating the relationship in that core, in that triangle. And what's kind of interesting, when you've got five people, or five keys in a core, it creates a complication where the client now has to look after potentially three or four keys of the five keys. And it really breaks down that single point of failure, because for me, you want to make it as simple as possible, because I think the most elegant systems are the simplest. And to me, adding additional complexity for the theatre of increased security is a moot point. You don't want to do that and overcomplicate it, because it then runs the risk of the recovery. And so there are two things that you really want to maximize. You want to maximize the security of your Bitcoin, and you want to maximize the recoverability. Now, I don't think the trade-off of perceived more security by having a three or five outweighs the benefit of the recoverability of a two or three setup. And so, horses for courses, and this is where I can tell you what my preference is, but if we've got Bitcoiners listen to this, I know you've done the work and you are going to be thinking about these things yourself. So I don't want to sort of portray that I know everything about this. This is from my experience, what I've seen, what we do, and why we do it. And if you've got a three or five quorum that's working for you, or a two or four that works for you, then have at it. That's great.
So when it comes to inheritance planning, I guess talk a little bit about what that looks like. What does a typical client come into, the Bitcoin advisor, they come to you, what do they say? What's their plan? What do they usually want to do with Bitcoin? And how would you advise, someone who wants to plan for their inheritance? They have a lot of Bitcoin, they want to plan for their inheritance. What does one of those meetings generally look like? And what does inheritance planning look like for Bitcoin?
You know what, it's quite a unique proposition, inheritance planning with Bitcoin, because we have the, I guess, enviable position where it is a bearer asset. But that enviable position of being a bearer asset also brings its own complications. And so the two things we really want to maximize for is the recoverability, the pragmatic recovery of your Bitcoin in an inheritance plan protocol, which ensures that you're not going to lose your Bitcoin on your death. That is our number one concern, because if you don't get that right, you will lose 100% of your Bitcoin stack. That to me is an unacceptable outcome, particularly when it comes to this. And so this is where, having that conversation and having a detailed inheritance plan about the recovery of it, and then actually going through a working example. So we asked our clients not to trust us that, hey, this works. We demonstrably prove to them that they don't need to be in the room when we're recovering their Bitcoin with their loved ones, their beneficiaries, their wife, their husband, whoever that might be. So, locking down the first part of that inheritance plan protocol is the pragmatic recovery of your Bitcoin. The second part is the legal framework for how that is to be, I guess, distributed to beneficiaries. And this is where the pragmatic recovery of your Bitcoin will ensure that you recover 100% of your Bitcoin. And then the legal framework that we like to work with professionals on in this will ensure that you maintain the maximum amount of Bitcoin that you're entitled to. And the reason why I say you're entitled to is because for clients in Europe, for clients in the UK, and more importantly, our largest client sector is the US, you have estate taxes of 40%. Now, if you're sitting on 100 or 1,000 Bitcoin stack, and you don't have the legal framework set up properly to ensure that you minimize your estate taxes, if you've got 1,000 bitcoins, you'll be passing on 600 bitcoins to your clients. That is a very heavy toll to be paying. And with good planning and a great, attorney or estate planner, you can help minimize that dramatically. That's not a set cost that you've got to pay. And this is where I look at the conversation around KYC v non-KYC. If you're KYC, you get to benefit from working with a lawyer who then help minimize the estate taxes on that front. And if you're doing non-KYC and want to do it outside of the system, I think you run just a huge amount of risk for your beneficiaries to inherit that. Now, it won't be your problem because you're dead, but for the Bitcoiners who, or for your beneficiaries who are inheriting that Bitcoin, I'm not sure if they're going to be as skilled as, the Bitcoiner who created that wealth. They're not going to have as much interest in it, and then they're going to have all of the problems associated with the chain analytic companies who are going to know exactly who's got it at what point in time. And this is where, to me, understanding the framework, the fact that you can end up getting, 66% more Bitcoin if you can properly do an estate plan that avoids the estate taxes. I think there are some huge benefits for having KYC Bitcoin in your stack because it allows you to benefit from some of the legal frameworks and tax incentives when you work inside the system rather than outside it.
Absolutely. And that's something that not a lot of people talk about. So I thank you for bringing that up. I certainly wasn't aware of that. I was aware of the size of the estate taxes here in the United States. Completely absurd. But I wasn't aware of the different strategies you can employ, especially when it comes to what kind of Bitcoin you own. What other regulatory considerations are there, at the Bitcoin Advisor when offering, Bitcoin to your clients as a part of their financial portfolio?
I think whether we discuss it or not, I think there is a huge benefit with working with, say, the Bitcoin Advisor or a third party in that you have a key in a foreign jurisdiction. And this is where it gets particularly beneficial from an asset protection perspective. We worked with one of the best lawyers in the US on this. You'll know exactly who I'm talking about. Having keys in different jurisdictions gives you the greatest legal protection that you can have. And I heard a crazy statistic about the US that there was something like 100 million lawsuits a year. Now, that's crazy. If you don't have your Bitcoin locked down in a structure that can help avoid that type of litigation, now I thought that number was crazy, but apparently it was Googled and checked. So I'm happy to be fact-checked on it. But literally,
So
I haven't
one
seen them.
lawsuit for every three people. Of course, they're not
That,
all
that's
personal lawsuits, but wow.
correct. That's why there's so many lawyers in the US for that reason. And if you don't do a good job of protecting your Bitcoin from a legal perspective, when this thing goes to the numbers that I think it's going to go to, every Bitcoin is going to be on, basically a litigation target. Like they're going to be litigated for the Bitcoin that they hold if it's not held in an asset or a structure that can give them the legal protection for that. And this is where, for me, and the Bitcoin Advisor holding a key, on the other side of the Pacific, outside of the jurisdiction of the US. Not that they're, we're outside of the jurisdiction of the US. Not that we can't be asked to do something on behalf of, a US entity, but it just creates a little bit of friction for someone who would want to litigate a Bitcoiner by having that key on the other side of the world in a different legal jurisdiction.
Absolutely. So for you as an investment advisor, obviously financial advisor, you've been thinking about investment strategies for ages. Bitcoin is a relatively new asset. It's pretty, compared to other assets, it really is in its infancy. So how do you explain to clients the value prop? I mean, people coming to you, they already know about Bitcoin, but for the uninitiated, I suppose, how do you usually explain how Bitcoin fits into a diversified investment strategy?
That's a very good question, Joe. I think a very important place to start because Bitcoin has such a broad appeal across so many different vectors. It's really important to understand where a client's coming from. And so to get a frame of reference for where they've been, is a really good starting point. So a question I like to start with is, what's your best and worst investment and why? Now, that gives typically the most common answer to that is the best investment I've made is my home or a property, something of that nature. And my worst investment has been this specky stock that I had a tip from a friend at the pub who said, you should go and buy this stock. And I went and bought it and it went to zero. And so with that frame of reference to understand what the client's preconditions are, what they favor and what they don't favor, that enables you to develop the arguments that are going to be the most persuasive for what their experiences have been. So I look at this and I think, okay, well, they're comfortable with property, so they want something that's stable, they want something that's secure, they want something that's going to be around, they want something that they can benefit from for the long term, and might be a generational asset that they inherited, that it's a family home that they want to pass on to the kids. And then we can start talking about Bitcoin in those terms that had a similar appeal to what they just described. And then in the same way, we tell people what Bitcoin is not. Bitcoin is not a speculative investment. It's just been endorsed by Larry Fink as a flight to safety, a safe haven asset. It's potentially going to be adopted as a reserve asset by the US, potentially in the next, election cycle. All of these things that Bitcoin is not to persuade them or dissuade them from what they thought it was, and encourage them to see that it's actually more like their best investment. So that comes in many forms, and I think we've all done hundreds, if not thousands, of hours of study on how to apply those principles. But I think understanding where the client is the most important thing, so we can deliver relevant information that they'll easily comprehend.
Of course, absolutely. And as you guys are kind of at the Bitcoin Advisor, as far as I know, you are the largest, most reputable firm, and you're decentralized in a way, but you're the largest and most reputable firm for this type of Bitcoin advisory service. As you have seen this company grow, as you guys have grown as a business, how is your What's kind of what is your role? How do you envision your role in the Bitcoin ecosystem, I suppose? Because like you mentioned, this is your way of pushing Bitcoin adoption. This is your way of kind of helping us on this mission. My way is talking to people on this podcast and writing about things. So as you have evolved with this business, how do you view the role of financial advisors within Bitcoin, and over the next several years, decades to come, do you think that there will be thousands more just like you who start coming into the fold, becoming financial advisors specifically for Bitcoin strategy?
I think it's inevitable, and this is where I'll just make a key distinction. The advice we give around Bitcoin is not in a financial advice capacity. Sure, we can discuss those things, but we're not licensed to do that. What we are licensed to do is ensure that clients don't lose their Bitcoin, and if they want to have a conversation around how to find additional Bitcoin, that's a conversation that we can have, but by no way or means is it financial advice. So I just want to make that distinction up front. Where I think, and this comes down to Bitcoin being a very unique asset, a very unique thing in its own right, is that for me, it's far easier to find a Bitcoiner and turn them into an advisor than it is to turn an advisor into a Bitcoiner. All of our advisors have had thousands, if not tens of thousands of hours of Bitcoin, studying it, learning it, living, breathing it. And this is where the traditional financial advisors, I think, are at a disadvantage, is because not only are they wrapped in a traditional financial framework, they also have the regulatory framework that they need to adhere to, which is very difficult to go out and advise on Bitcoin and tell people to hold it in self-custody because of those things that I mentioned earlier, that it puts you at huge risk. On a personal and professional level, that if you tell clients, hey, you've got to self-custody your Bitcoin, go out and buy it and put it on this little dongle, and then if they turn around, do all of that, and then lose their Bitcoin, who is legally responsible for that loss? And is that advisor going to make good on the loss that the clients had? And this is where, for me personally, these were some of the struggles that I had to deal with in creating collaborative security, because I felt responsible for the success of my clients in being able to maintain and transfer their Bitcoin. And I felt there was a moral, if not an ethical, obligation to ensure that they did that successfully. And the fastest way to do that with the least amount of training is the service at the offer, that we believe that within less than an hour and a half, we can have a client fully onboarded into self-custody that is institutional grade, that they can pass from the grave.
Wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. When a client comes to you, obviously you mentioned, people are at different stages along their Bitcoin journey. What are some of the most common misconceptions you hear when people come to you, they want to set up a multi-sig setup? Misconceptions about Bitcoin or multi-sig or key management, any of that. What are some of the more common ones that you encounter?
Oh, good question. I'd say probably a common one is people think that the Bitcoin is actually on the device. And it's not technically on the device, it's on the ledger. And the device only gives you access to it. And then there is some, say, some confusion around how multi-sig works. It's like, oh, so is a bit on this device and a bit on that device and a bit on the other one? No, it's not. It's actually more like a cloud service that your Bitcoin sits in a cloud that you can only access when you've got two of the three private keys. So it's more akin to a safety deposit box at the bank, where the bank has a key and you have a key, and you need to insert those two keys in the safety deposit box in order to get access to it. So I'd say that's probably the biggest misconception. I can say it's one of the great things that we love doing as part of the education is once a client's actually transferred Bitcoin into their vault, or is in the process of doing that, we can actually see and watch it on mempool to actually break down the transaction, have a look at what's done, have a look at when it actually goes in and when it gets settled. And there's so much information there that clients look at that and are just completely blown away that, most Bitcoiners haven't looked at mempool for a transaction that they're doing. And when they see it, it's quite a dealing from an aesthetic standpoint.
Of course. Yeah, it's such a helpful visual tool to kind of explain the blockchain, how it works, how transactions actually get hashed onto the ledger. It is a very, very cool tool. So it's cool to know that you use that. Let's take a step back. I want to talk about custodians versus non-custodians. I think the last time we talked a little bit about some of these exchanges that have blown up, exploded, right? You being part of the Bitcoin advisor, you know front to back, like the back of your hand, how to explain custodial versus non-custodial Bitcoin solutions. What are the benefits and drawbacks of both? And at what allocation, what Bitcoin amount, probably in, I guess, US dollar terms, do you start advising people to move to a non-custodial solution, or do you always advise a non-custodial solution regardless of the amount of Bitcoin they own?
That is a very good question, Joe, and it really is horses for courses. And this is where the advice we give around this space really is of a very personal nature, so it's very subjective. And this is where people have very different tolerances for what they want in their setup. So an example of this is we've got clients, with tens of millions of dollars, self-custody, no problem, doesn't even think twice about it. The custodial option hasn't even considered it. And then we've got clients with much smaller balances of circa, sub 2 million, sub $1 million, who are looking to diversify their perceived risk into custodial and non-custodial options. So for that reason, I think it really comes down to a level of understanding of what you've got. So we've got clients who have got all their Bitcoin in the collaborative security protocol that we've got. And I feel like it's institutional grade custody for mums and dads is how I'd describe it. But some people want to have a non-custodial option. And this is where, say, I think the last time we spoke, we were talking a little bit about the ETFs. And I think the ETFs are really a gateway drug for people getting into the Bitcoin rabbit hole. And although it's a non-custodial option, it's a great way to get people educated in this space, because I feel like Bitcoin's been around for 15 years now. If people were serious about Bitcoin, they would have bought it by now. Like, it's not like anyone on earth has not heard about Bitcoin. So my thinking on this is, a lot of people say, hey, you should learn about Bitcoin. It's like people only follow their interest in a financial capacity. And so the level of financial commitment that someone has to an asset will determine their ability to learn about it. And so my thinking is, and this is what we've tried to do with clients, is get them comfortable with walking to the deep end of a pool and pushing them in. Provide a framework where they can't drown, where they're not going to lose any Bitcoin. Yes, they're going to suffer volatility on a large percentage of their assets, but they're not going to lose any Bitcoin. And if we can do that, once they're in the deep end, they are swimming like hell to make sure that they keep their head above water. And what does that mean? They're going to start learning as much as they can about it, because they're like, hang on a second, I've just put 10 or 20% of my net assets into this thing, and I don't really know what I should to feel comfortable with that decision. And this is where the team works really hard on ensuring that clients get access to the best people in Bitcoin, so that if they've got any questions on this, they can ensure that their education on this space gets up to speed quicker than they could by themselves. And this is where I think Gigi had a great quote, the more you know, the more you buy. And so part of our responsibility as advisors in this space is to chip away at any concerns that clients have so that they can feel comfortable allocating more to it. Because once they understand what the system is, they'll feel comfortable allocating more to it.
Absolutely. So how do you educate clients about Bitcoin, Bitcoin security and best practices? I'm sure when people come to you, some people get it. They don't need as many resources. Some people, there's a lot more handholding involved. So what kind of things do you do at the Bitcoin Advisor to help educate your clients about, now that they have a multi-sig setup, you know, the best practices in managing that?
I think it's understanding what their experiences are to start with. So again, you know, what has been their experience to date? How sophisticated are they when it comes to self-custody? And this is where I had this conversation with one of our team members. He is insanely accomplished. No one's heard of him. And he's probably onboarded more people to self-custody than anyone else on earth. I say that with no with complete sincerity. He would have been responsible for onboarding over 2,000 people to self-custody. He owned a hardware shop where people could buy devices, and he's literally onboarded thousands of people in the single seat. And what's interesting is, from his experience, I'm not putting words in his mouth because we've talked about this a lot, but the amount of effort required to educate someone on a single seat device to ensure that they're not going to muck it up and avoid every pitfall is far larger than helping educate a client in a multi-sig setup that we deliver. There might be half an hour worth of, you know, thoughts and comments on how to look after their device when it comes to a collaborative security arrangement. But in a single sig, there are so many more attack vectors that you need to consider. So you need to be much more diligent in the security of your single seed and where you store your seed words, how you store them, who has access to them, ensuring that you don't put them into a computer, making sure you don't share them with anyone. There's a much higher, because the attack vectors are so much more when it's a single seed, there is so much more work to do when it comes to educating a client on holding a single key. But a single key in a quorum of keys, like the 2 or 3 that we set up, a lot of the attack vectors are reduced because the client doesn't store any Bitcoin on that single seed wallet. And there's nothing that if someone compromises that single seed key for the client, there's nothing that the client can lose by having that key compromised.
Wonderful. So a couple final closing questions for you here. The first one is the importance of private key management. When you're in a single key setup, you lose that key, it's over. It's over. You lose your funds. But, you know, in a 2 or 3 setup, obviously it's more robust. You eliminate single points of failure, but private key management is still important. So when people come to you, and they wonder, what do I do with my 2 keys? Who do I give them to? Where do I give them? Where do I put them? Etc. Talk about the importance of private key management in a multi-sig setup, and then what sort of advice you give people on how to actually manage their private keys, the 2 of them, once they have those in their hand.
Sure. The private key management is critical. However, in a collaborative environment, it is much less critical than it would be if you just had one. By having two or three keys in a Ikora, you reduce responsibility on yourself personally dramatically, in that if you have a catastrophic failure with that single key, if it gets compromised for whatever reason, or you lose it in totality. And just sharing a story with you, I've had a number of clients who we set up in this collaborative security protocol. We set them up with Z-Word, the hardware device. They walked out the door. They came back within a month and absolutely terrified that, obviously, I told them, hey, you need to look after this. It's really important. You could lose your Bitcoin if you lose this device. They lost not only their Z-Words, but the actual device itself. And they came back to me terrified, saying, Peter, I've lost my device. I've lost my seed words. Have I lost my Bitcoin? And I could very proudly tell them, no, that's what no single point of failure means, is that you can do effectively anything you want with that device and you're not going to lose your Bitcoin. And of course, you're required to have a counterparty sign a transaction. They can't move their Bitcoin without the counterparty signing. And a lot of people look at that and say, oh, I'm not sure if I'd want that. But when you're dealing with millions or tens of millions or hundreds of millions of dollars in Bitcoin, that's usually a pretty sweet piece of a security setup that most people would want, that they don't want millions of dollars moving around at the touch of a button. They want to plan for, moving that in an orderly fashion. And typically our clients plan months in advance of when they want to be moving Bitcoin. So we don't have any surprises of, oh, I've got to move 100 Bitcoin now. Can you get it done? It's like we've got a great relationship with our clients. We understand what they're trying to achieve,
How they're
trying
trying
to achieve it, and the timeline for what they want to achieve. And so typically we understand when we'll be required to be signing a transaction into the future, and that's all part of the service. And this is where when you control two of the three keys in Ikora and you're fully responsible for that, if you lose two of those keys, your Bitcoin's gone. There's no recovering it. And this is what terrifies me, having a fiduciary duty for clients, is that's an unacceptable level of risk. And I'm really proud to say that we've had a 8-year track record of giving advice to clients on Bitcoin, and we haven't lost a single Bitcoin.
Absolutely. That is a stellar track record. Wow. Wow. Not one. Remarkable. You guys really are the best to do it.
We try, and we think it's a continual improvement process. So I don't think the job's finished yet. And to sort of come back to a question you asked earlier, what are we trying to achieve here? We sincerely like to get every coin off exchange, and we want to do that in the simplest, easiest, fastest manner. We think that's the best contribution that we can make to the Bitcoin space, and happy for anyone to leverage off all that we know to help them do that safely.
Absolutely fantastic. I think that's a perfect spot to end it, a perfect call to action to end it on. Wonderful. Peter, thanks again for a great discussion. We'll have you on again. Big things in the works. Can't say them just yet, but big things in the works. Before we head off, is there a final word that you would like to leave our viewers with? And also, let the people know where they can find you.
Sure thing. I'd just like to say, having played around with Theia and the device, the app itself, I love that device. I think it's fabulous. It's easy. And really, I'd love to give a shout out to the team that's been working on that. I think from a user experience perspective, it is an absolutely outstanding piece of software that could help drag a whole host of Bitcoin off exchanges. So I just want to give a shout out to your team. And yourself for doing a great job in spreading that message. And I think it's something that will be adopted quite broadly and widely and quickly. So I'm excited for what your team has got in front of them. I'm excited for ours. And you can catch me at Twitter at PeterBTC Advisor with an ER or thebitcoinadvisor.com. Either of those places, any questions, please reach out. Love to help.
Fantastic. You heard the man, folks. Check out his X profile linked in this video if you're watching it on X, and in the description if you're watching it on YouTube. And of course, thebitcoinadvisor.com. Peter, thanks so much once again for coming on. Am I going to see you in Nashville? Are you going to be there?
I think you are. You'll see me there next week. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Fantastic. Love it, man. We'll grab a drink. Well, that's everything for today. Thanks so much, everybody. We appreciate it as always. And of course, check out Theia on the App Store, spelled Theya. Your keys, your Bitcoin, world's simplest Bitcoin self-custody solution, as Peter just alluded to. We appreciate those kind words, and we'll talk to you very soon. Thanks again.